Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Clones, welcome back to the Daily Jungle Podcast Tuesday. So a very busy day here. Cowboys and Dak Prescott get back on the horse with that win over Arizona after they got smashed up last week in Denver. Greg Popovich had some choice words for the president. And I laid down the gauntlet for you clones, a deal with the devil if there ever was one. And we have three nice guests, NBA legend Grant Hill, LA Rams defensive tackle Michael Brockers, and NC State head football coach Dave Doran. Alvy, I know you've got a lot to get done today, so go ahead and do what you do right now. After watching last night's game, I've got one thing to say, and only one thing to say. How about them Cowboys?
How about them Cowboys? Yeah!
Now, I start with that because that's not what anybody was thinking in the first quarter last night as Dallas was getting steamrolled. Three offensive plays in the opening 15 minutes. And instead of, how about them Cowboys? It was, who the hell are these Cowboys? These were not the guys who were expected to repeat as NFC Eastern champs and then make a deep run in the postseason. They got hammered in Denver. They were getting crushed in Arizona. And suddenly that offensive line didn't look so dominant. Suddenly, Dez Bryant looked like he was fading. And suddenly, Ezekiel Elliott looked pretty average. Jerry Jones had to be lower than a crippled cricket's ass. Or, thanks, Alvy. Or at least, a circumcised mosquito.
Circumcising the mosquito.
In other words, it was time to get out the shovels and start burying the Cowboys. And then something happened. Dak Prescott happened. And then it all changed. Look, Dak's definitely had better games from a statistical standpoint, but I'm not sure he's had many bigger football games. Think about it. On the road, coming off a bad loss and risking the possibility of falling to 1-2 on the season, Dak comes up huge. He was the one who put that team on his back. 13 of 18, 183 yards, couple of touchdowns. It may not win you many fantasy leagues, but it's going to win you an actual football game. And yes, I said win you the game. And that's the key here. This was not a matter of him playing it safe and not losing it. There's nothing safe about rolling out and firing bombs. My man looked like Brett Favre out there at times last night. Alvy's on his game. Get it, Alvy! So much for that rap that this guy is nothing more than a game manager and can't make plays downfield. Game manager. He was the game winner last night. I mean, sure, Ezekiel Elliott had 80 yards, but that wasn't about Dak turning and handing off. And yes, Dez did have a touchdown. But aside from that, he was taken out of the game by Patrick Peterson. So last night's win was all about Dak, starting with that absurd opening TD.
The snap, the handoff. Fake, and it goes with Prescott running over the right tackle. He is knocked head over heels and flies into the end zone for a Dallas touchdown.
Westwood won, and that's your franchise quarterback flipping over a couple of defenders and into the end zone. And if that doesn't get you fired up, nothing will. And it shook the Cowboys out of a funk that went back to last week. Then in the third quarter, he hit Dez Bryant with a pass, and well, this happened.
In the gun from the 15, shotgun snap, drops back three, cocks his right arm, looks and throws a line drive up the middle of short. It's caught by Bryant at the 10, breaks a tackle at the 5, runs to the hash mark, drives, pushing a pile, he's down, he's got it, touchdown, Dallas!
So Dez turns into some kind of transformer and bulldozes half the Cardinals defense into the end zone. But again, this was not about Dez carrying that team, because that play aside, he was pretty much taken out of the game by Peterson. Which is why, in the fourth quarter, when it mattered most, it was Dak and Bryce Butler. With Dak going off, firing one rocket after another while on the run to Butler, there was the 39-yard TD.
The snap, the spin, the fake handoff, the drop back of 7. He's flushed, he's chased, he runs on the numbers, he cocks his arm, he throws a long pass down the middle in the end zone, leaping, two-handed, falling down catch, touchdown, Bryce Butler, touchdown! How did he grab it?
Unbelievable pitch and catch. And then the 53-yard bomb that set up the Elliott TD that iced the game. So I'm not sure what's more impressive, that he unleashed those lasers on the run or that he made it look so easy, because they're not. It's not. At least not for most quarterbacks. But then again, Dak is not most quarterbacks. That had been the thought coming into this season. You know, good quarterback, good game manager, smart guy, good leader, well-liked in the locker room, but not a guy who's going to make plays downfield. Not a guy that'll make plays downfield, but rather a guy that will get you into the right plays and then turn it over to the real studs, like Ezekiel, Dez, and Jason Witten, to actually do the heavy lifting and win games for Dallas. You know, Dak won't lose you a game, but he probably won't win you one either. And that take could not be more wrong. It couldn't be more incorrect. This guy's a flat-out stud. Flat-out stud, flat-out winner. And if you didn't know that before last night, you do now. To me, he was that impressive. We are joined by Grant Hill. Grant, let me ask you first about media day yesterday for most NBA teams. Training camp's about to open up. When this time of year rolls around, Grant, do you ever get the itch to lace him back up once again?
No, I don't. No. That ship has sailed, Jim. I'm in the sports media like you now. No desire to play, but I do get excited. It's a fun time of the year. We've had a little bit of a break the last few months where the NBA, believe it or not, was not in the news cycle. But it's exciting. A lot of look, I'm like you, Jim. I'm a fan. And I want to see players. I want to see some of the changes. I want to see if anyone can deal with Cleveland and Golden State this year. So it's always an exciting time of the year, as I'm sure you know.
Definitely so. Grant Hill joining us. So, Grant, let's talk for a moment about some of the changes. What do you make of the arrival of Carmelo Anthony in Oklahoma City? Do you like that fit for him and for the Thunder?
Well, look, I mean, we knew that he had to leave New York. That had run its course. But I like what Sam Presti did. I mean, he's bold. He, basically having three All-Stars now, at least gets them now in the conversation. You know, now the big question is, can they come together as one? Can they form that chemistry and camaraderie out there? They're all three of them, including Paul George, are all used to sort of dominating the basketball. So if they can learn how to play with one another, they have a chance to be really good. I also like the idea maybe of Carmelo sliding over to the four and playing some power forward like he did with USA Basketball. He was so successful in that environment, playing that in that position.
You know, Russell Westbrook, Grant, we know he's going to get his shots. You have to think that Melo's going to find his shots as well. So in terms of that chemistry, how do you go about making sure that Paul George is fully integrated into the offense?
Well, you know, the good thing is that, you know, Russell Westbrook, I mean, it's his team. He's the point guard. I really do think a lot of it is him, and it's his responsibility. And as great as he was last year with that historic season, you know, he remembers when Durant was there and James Harden. It just, you know, really gave them a chance to contend, and they almost beat Miami many years ago. So I think it's upon Russell Westbrook to maybe do a little bit less, empower these guys, and figure it out, you know, as a group as they go. They're not going to be great at the beginning. It's going to take some time. It did with LeBron when he went to Miami, when LeBron went to Cleveland. Even last year when Durant went to Golden State, it took a minute for everybody to click. But it's a long season, and if they can click and get it right, they have a chance to be really good.
Grant Hill joining us. All right, Grant, what about the East? You look at the East, and you've got the arrival of Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward in Boston. How long do you think it's going to take them to get on the same page, the very thing you're talking about? Is this something that, in their case, can happen relatively quickly, or is it going to take some time?
You know, I mean, I think the East is not as good. So I think, you know, Boston, Cleveland, Toronto, Washington will stick out and will be sort of those top-tier teams in the Eastern Conference. But with Boston, you know, Kyrie's a great addition, so is Hayward. You know, it'll be interesting to see their identity. You lose an Avery Bradley, you lose a Crowder. You know, these guys brought a toughness. They brought a defensive focus, an intensity, and that was a part of who that team was. That was their identity, and they don't have that kind of player now. And so it'll be interesting to see. I think they have a chance. They got great coaching. You have great talent in those two guys. You're throwing out Horford. But defensively, they would just dog you. And Crowder and, of course, and Marcus Smart, who's still there, but Avery Bradley, they set the tone defensively and made life miserable for the opponents.
Grant Hill joining us, courtesy of Choices Matter and PlanAgainstPain.com, which I'll talk about in a minute. Now, Grant, the fans really don't want to hear it, but the fact is politics are intersecting with sports once again. I'm curious, what was your reaction when you saw that Donald Trump had revoked the Warriors' invitation to the White House after Steph Curry said that he was not interested in going?
Well, it's kind of par for the course. You know, I mean, I think nothing sort of surprises me here. And, you know, but I will say, well, all this was happening over the weekend. There was a sense of pride, you know, being a part of the sports, you know, sort of brotherhood, to see athletes coming out in support of each other, LeBron James, the NFL, players, coaches, owners, locking arms. It just shows you that despite all the differences and despite maybe even differences on a team, that people can come together and work together. And that's what team sports is all about. It's collective responsibility. It's teamwork. Regardless of whether we, you know, look, I played at Duke, and I played with my guy Leitner, and he was difficult, as were all my teammates, as was I. but we put aside those differences, and when we got on the court, we were family, and we were one, and we played for one another. And that's what sports teaches you. And so hopefully that can be an example. Hopefully that can be part of the bringing of people together as we go through some of these challenging times in our country.
You know, Graham, I'm looking at this, though, and you saw the reaction around the NFL. I would also say that elite NBA players like LeBron, Chris Paul, Steph Curry, the list goes on, they seem even more willing than elite athletes in other sports to step forward and to take that stand when it comes to societal or social issues. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I do think athletes in general are just more inclined in this day and age to speak up and speak out. And I think part of it's social media. Part of this generation, millennials, they've grown up with technology. Technology is sort of the digital currency of their generation. And they're accustomed to sort of, you know, sort of playing in that sandbox, if you will. So they can go directly to an audience. They can go directly to their fan base and talk about anything. And that's a wonderful thing. You know, the NBA, I mean, I don't know. I think I think the NBA overall, as an owner in the NBA with the Atlanta Hawks, I think we're a very progressive league. I think Adam Silver understands that the world is somewhat changing, and he's been a great leader in his short term. And so it's just an environment where I think everyone supports everyone's right to freedom of speech.
We're talking to Grant Hill. Now, Grant, we've seen the sports world and athletes and how they've responded to relief efforts in the wake of the hurricanes in Texas, Florida, the Caribbean. Take me back a little bit. There's a story that after Hurricane Katrina, you went to a relief shelter in Baton Rouge, and you were comforting a woman who had not seen her daughter in 2 weeks. And she said to you, quote, "Grant Hill, will you help me find my daughter? Please, I need to find my baby. I need to find my grandbabies," end quote. What do you remember about that visit and the entire experience?
Well, I remember that visit, and you know, Katrina was terrible, just like Hurricane Harvey. And my mom is from New Orleans, and at the time, my grandmother was living in New Orleans and was displaced. She managed to evacuate before the storm, and so while she was safe out in California, you know, just felt it was the right thing to do to try to go and bring some goods, some supplies, some food, some clothing to some of those that were displaced. And so you heard all types of stories, Jim. Stories like that. People who lived near my grandmother. There was one lady that lived, you know, a couple blocks from my grandmother, knew my grandmother, and here she was evacuating and in a shelter. So it was a tough experience. But it was something I'll never forget, and I could just feel and remember the appreciation that folks had. And I think the same thing happened with Houston. I know loads of athletes, and in particular the NBA guys, sending their support, their resources, supplies, going down, volunteering. And it's really encouraging to see that, not just with athletes, but just people in general. We help each other, you know, and our country, you know, sort of came together and really sort of came to support those that were really struggling during Hurricane Harvey.
Grant Hill joining us. Now, Grant, you're working with Choices Matter, which is designed to educate patients and doctors about their options when it comes to post-surgical pain. What are you doing with them, and what was it about this project that interests you the most?
Well, you know, obviously, you know, Jim, we're dealing with an opioid epidemic right now. And I, of course, have had a number of surgeries through my career, had 11 total going back to college. And I, of course, you know, post-surgery, to manage pain, I took opioids. And I never liked how I felt. I never liked the reaction in my body, but it was the only thing you could take. So you take them for a couple days until your pain subsided. In more recent years, I had a surgery, and I was introduced to this entirely new procedure where there's a long-acting numbing medication that's injected into your body before and during surgery, and it lasts for 3 to 4 days after surgery. So I didn't have any opioids. I didn't have to take any pain medication afterwards. So just a wonderful procedure. I want to encourage people who are considering surgery. They have options. They should talk to their doctor about their concerns. This is available. You can go to a great website, Jim, planagainstpain.com, where there's a wealth of information available. And it can be a valuable resource as you're weighing your decision to go into surgery.
Grant Hill joining us, and that's planagainstpain.com. And Grant, one more thought, kind of along those lines. I saw on Instagram that you were doing a 30-day transformation recently. You know, Grant, I think about you, world-class athlete, but then you retire, and it's always curious to see what athletes do, and you're going pretty hard now. What inspired you to do that, and then how'd it go for you?
Well, you know, I did 30 days, but I've extended it to 90 days. Mm. So I'm probably a little bit past halfway, close to 50 days right now, but it's been fun. It's been a great thing and a great challenge, and I've enjoyed it. And I'll have to post my pictures after 90 days.
I'm talking about Media Day. And yesterday was Media Day for a number of teams, including San Antonio, which means that you'd expect it to be Greg Popovich's least favorite day of the year. I mean, if the guy can't stand a two-question in-game interview, what is he going to do with a full day dedicated to the media? Does this sound like a guy who relishes the chance to spend an entire day with journos?
Did I watch the game? No, I watched one of those island shows. Help me.
It's hard to appreciate or enjoy torture.
No rocket science.
Turnover.
Oh, this is one of the joys of my life right here.
You're serious? You really think I can explain that?
Happy?
Unbelievable. You guys are getting paid, right?
No second question.
The questions are so incisive and well thought out. How could one not enjoy the challenge of trying to find the answer?
Are there some questions here you're going to ask me, or what are we going to do?
Need to get slapped.
That's great. You're a very observant man.
Am I being punked or something?
Am I being punked or something? Does this sound like the kind of guy who would relish a chance to spend an entire day with journos? But there he was. And I'm glad he was there. He was there yesterday, and the guy who is famous for yelling, "I want some nasty," brought some nasty. He brought it himself, not for his team, not for the media, but instead for the president, for NASCAR, for Richard Petty, and for people who do not think that there is a problem. He brought molten hot lava.
The childishness and the gratuitous fear-mongering and race-baiting has been so consistent that it's almost expected.
But that right there was nothing compared to some of the other remarks from the Air Force Academy graduate who served. All right, let's be clear about this. He served 5 years in the military.
Our country's an embarrassment in the world. This is an individual who actually thought that when people held arms during the games that they were doing it to honor the flag. That's delusional. Absolutely delusional. But it's what we have to live with. So you got a choice. We can continue to bounce our heads off the wall with his conduct, or we can decide that the institutions of our country are more important, that people are more important, that the decent America that we all thought we had and want is more important, and get down to business at the grassroots level and do what we have to do.
Straight fire. Our country is an embarrassment in the world, quote unquote. And if you thought that he got bent about being asked about shooting percentages during the middle of games, he was even more bent about Trump uninviting the Warriors to the White House, calling it...
Well, I thought it was comical that it was rescinded, because they weren't going anyway. So it's like a sixth grader is going to have a party in his backyard, and he finds out somebody, you know, might not come, so he disinvites him. But again, I think the behavior, although it's disgusting, it's also comical.
It's disgusting, but it's comical. It's like a sixth grader finding out that, oh, I'm not invited, oh, you're not invited either. Quote, it's disgusting, but it's comical. And then he drops some serious knowledge on the issue of race.
Obviously, you know, race is the elephant in the room, and we all understand that. But unless it is talked about constantly, it's not going to get better. People get bored. Oh, is it that again? They pull in a race card again. Why do we have to talk about that? Well, because it's uncomfortable. And there has to be an uncomfortable element in the discourse for anything to change. You know, whether it's the LGBT movement or, you know, women's suffrage, race, it doesn't matter. People have to be made to feel uncomfortable, and especially white people, because we're comfortable. We still have no clue of what being born white means.
All right, now he nailed that. I mean, he absolutely nailed that, because that is the reaction that a lot of you are having. Oh, great. Another day of this, Rome. Can we just get back to talking about the games? Well, yeah, we can, and we will. But why do you not want to talk about this? Why is this such a problem? And the answer is generally one of two things. One, because there is no problem, you're talking about a problem that doesn't exist. When there is a problem, clearly there's a problem. Or you might be willing to acknowledge that there's a problem, but you don't want to talk about it because it's uncomfortable. It's not a conversation you want to have. It's not an easy conversation, to which is his point. You have to have the conversation for that very reason, because it's uncomfortable. And if you don't have a conversation which is uncomfortable, then there will never be any progress. But that point that he made at the very end, he said people have to be made to feel uncomfortable, especially white people. And then added, quote, we still have no clue what being born white means. All right, this is something he then went to, which is very important.
If you read some of the, you know, recent literature, you'll realize it really is no such thing as whiteness. But we've kind of made it up. That's not my original thought, but it's true. Because you were born white, you have advantages that are systemically, culturally, psychologically there. And they've been built up and cemented for hundreds of years. But many people can't look at it. It's too difficult. It can't be something that is on their plate on a daily basis. People want to hold their position. People want the status quo. People don't want to give that up. And until it's given up, it's not going to be fixed.
That's absolutely incredible. That came from an NBA coach. A basketball coach said that. Think about what he just said. That's a sociology lesson coming from the head coach of the San Antonio Spurs and USA Basketball. He's talking about, quote, recent literature in the discussion of race and society. For all these comparisons that are constantly made between Bill Belichick and Greg Popovich, for the success that they've had, for the way they interact with the media, could you imagine the hood man standing up at media day and dropping, well, anything other than a few grumbles? I don't think that you're ever going to get the hoodie up there at the dais saying things like, because you were born white, you have advantages systemically, culturally, psychology there. They've been built up for hundreds of years. Many people can't look at it. It can't be something on their plate on a daily basis. People want their status quo. People don't want to give it up. Until it's given up, it's not going to be fixed, end quote. Yeah, I don't think any other coach is going to make a statement like that. People want their status quo. People don't want to give it up. Until it's given up, it's not going to be fixed. Yeah, I don't think that Belichick, and I'm not singling him out just to single out the hood, but I'm singling him out because you always hear that comparison. Wow, these guys are so alike. Two of the best coaches ever to do it. And neither want to talk to the media. Wow, these guys are similar. Not really. Not really at all. I mean, is Belichick going with a history lesson about social structures or a discussion of supply-side economics? Can you imagine any NFL coach saying anything about anything that wasn't football. I can't recall the last time an NFL coach cited, quote, recent literature on any subject, let alone one as difficult and challenging as race and white identity. And yet the guy who seemingly would rather crack on reporters for what they're wearing or how they pose a question is just getting loose with sociological breakdowns. Greg Popovich is a true American original. I have never heard any coach say anything remotely similar to that, except for Pop. And he even went next level with it yesterday. That was at Media Day. So I would have thought that that guy, of all guys, would have wanted next to nothing to do with Media Day, given how he interacts with reporters in in-game interviews. But that was something that had to be said. And I respect it, and I admire it, and I'm glad he said it. Michael Brockers joins us. Michael, nice to have you back. How are you?
I'm good, good, good. How are you guys?
Good. I'm great. Listen, I know you're focused on the Cowboys, but for a moment, can you take us back to Thursday night? You're rocking the Color Rush uniforms. You're in prime time. You're on the road against a divisional rival. What was the mood like among the players before that game, and how good did it feel to come out with a win the way you did?
We were just really focused on not getting ahead of ourselves because, you know, San Fran before that game, you know, having, you know, they didn't score an offensive touchdown and, you know, they were, you know, they were just looking not themselves. So, but the biggest part for us was, you know, Coach Wade getting on us and letting us know, like, not to take the team lightly. This is a divisional game. They know us. We know them. And it's going to be a tough game. And it was. It was a great game.
Michael Brock was joining us. You mentioned Coach Wade. You know, it's so curious because you've got Sean McVay, and he's the youngest coach in the NFL, and then you've got Coach Wade, who's your defense coordinator, Wade Phillips. He turned 70 over the summer, but he seems to have this great ability to connect with players, obviously much younger players. How is Wade Phillips able to get guys to go so hard for him?
I don't know, and I don't know what he does to keep up with, you know, this day and age and the music and what's going on, because he shocks us every day. Like, we'll be at practice and some song will come up and he'll sing the chorus and I'll be like, what? Coach Wade, like, how do you know this song? This song, right. This song came out like this year. How do you know it? You know, because not saying like he's old, you know, so like you don't expect him to know these songs, and he knows them and he connects with us. And he's just a great coach, man. I love him.
Dude, he's not middle-aged. I mean, like, he's old. Like, I'm middle-aged, but, like, he's old. He's 70.
He's going to shit on me if he hears this. Like, but, yeah, he's old. But he's still young. That's what's so crazy. He's old. He has an old body, I guess, but a young soul. So
that's great.
I guess it matches. Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. I'm not here to crack the guy for being old because we're all going to get old. But like you said, he's got an old body, but a young soul. And it's not just music. Like, he's not afraid of new things like social media. What do you make of his Twitter game?
Right. His Twitter game is awesome, man. Me and, you know, I think after the Wick game where we were – I think it was a preseason game, and we were on the back of the bus, and I was like, Coach, man, come on, man. Your Twitter's always popping, man. Tweet me out, man. I need some followers. And he was like, man, me and Brock dripping. I was like, what? Okay, Coach, I see you, man. I love that, man. He's awesome.
Michael Brock is joining us. All right, so what about your head coach? One of the things you've said about McVay is he coaches like a young man. He's not trying to be an older coach, but in a very good way. What do you mean by that, and then how much has he changed the dynamic with the team?
I say that because he coaches situations all the time. You know, he wants to make sure that we're ahead of the game when it comes to situations, because that's what this game is all about. Everybody's good. Everybody has a great scheme. Everybody has great players. But when it comes down to understanding situations, you know, when to stop the clock, when to, you know, understand when to come on and kick field goals, that's the most important. But he wants to score points, and when it comes to, you know, what the fans want and what they want to see, they want to see numbers, they want to see high scores, and I think that's what he wants to give them.
Michael Brock was joining us. Now, you and Aaron Donald have been reunited once again, and now he's back in training camp. When he was not there, though, you said that you felt like you were missing something, kind of like the piece of a puzzle that wasn't there. How does it feel now that he's back and the two of you are killing it on the line once again?
It feels good. It feels back to normal. I mean, we just have to get this 3-4 defense, you know, down packed where we understand it to a level where it comes natural. It's not we're thinking and we're, you know, wondering if we got this gap or that gap, and it becomes natural. But once that happens, man, we're going to be rolling. I promise you that.
So, Michael, how much better do you think this defense can still get once you're more familiar with that scheme?
That's so crazy. You know, we haven't been looking ourselves, and everybody knows that, and we know that. And we know we can do so much better, and that's what's so scary about this defense is we've been doing okay, but we know we can do so much better. And once we fix those little tweaks that are very fixable, man, it's going to be a scary sight to see.
Rams defensive tackle Michael Brockers is my guest. Now, Jared Goff had arguably the best game of his career Thursday night. The offense put up a lot of points. Since you've been with the Rams, it's been a team that's been built on the defense. So as a defensive unit, what's it like to see the offense going out there and moving the ball and putting up the numbers they are?
It feels good. It feels good. I mean, you know, we say this saying all the time, don't blink. And when situations happen and, you know, scenarios happen where the ball doesn't roll our way, or, you know, we lose the ball and we don't get down on ourselves, we don't blink. We just get out there and play the next play. And I think, you know, with him preaching that and us going out there and executing, man, this team is scary, man. I don't want to put any promises on us. I mean, we're 2-1 right now, and that's where we're at, and we're just focusing on the next one. But when you get this thing rolling, and we're rolling on both sides of the ball, man, it's going to be I can't wait to see what that's going to be like.
Now, you're in your second season in Los Angeles. What has the transition to Southern California been like, and does it feel more like home now?
The first season was kind of we were kind of just thrown in here. It was new. I mean, we love the fan base. I mean, that was the one reason that we were so excited to come over here, because the fans wanted us over here, and they loved us. And not saying that the St. Louis fans didn't. It was just, man, we had so much support. We had, you know, we packed out the stadium the first game, and that was a crazy sight to see. And, you know, we were just thrown in here. But now, understanding what times to, you know, get through traffic, and what eating places is nice to eat with your wife, and where to go, and I'm saying you got to take an Uber everywhere, because you don't want to drive and have to park. So now it's smooth. It's a smooth process. It's not such a shock to the system, you know, because we've been in the city for a year and a half now, and it's going great.
You figure it out. It's a great town, and you figure it out. And then finally,
right,
you're in Southern California, but you're from Houston, and you led the way for the Rams in the relief efforts following Hurricane Harvey. What was it like for you to watch your hometown go through what it has gone through?
It was hard. It was hard, you know, watching it from so far away, because, you know, in Southern California, you have, you know, beautiful weather every day, and you look on the news and you see your city, what they're going through, and the hurricane sitting right on top of them, you know, pouring water on them. You're like, man, you know, what can I do? And you're calling home, and you know, people are telling you it's okay, but it looks so bad on you know, on the media and, you know, the news. So what I really wanted to do was finally, you know, find a way to do something positive, because my whole career I felt like I hadn't really, you know, did anything positive. So I just wanted to give back and show Houston that, you know, I'm still here. I'm still a Houstonian. I was affected by it as well, with, you know, my home being there and my family still being there. So I just wanted to show my support and let them know that I'm still here for them.
So now I'm going to do something that I really have never done. I'm going to ask you for something. Straight up, I'm looking for something in return. I'm going to ask you to do something for me. Because the way I see it, you're getting free premium content on this new podcast. And all I want in return is the smallest ask ever. And frankly, I really don't ask you for very much at all, if anything at all. And even this, as small an ask as it is, I don't like doing it. In fact, I hate doing it. I really do. I don't ever want to have to ask you for anything at all, but this is important to me. I want you, and again, listen carefully to what I'm about to say, because you get something out of this potentially. I want you to get this podcast into the iTunes top 10 list. I'm officially challenging the best and most rabid audience in the history of sports talk radio to help me, help us, take over the iTunes podcast chart. Here's how you do this. If you have an iPhone, take it out right now. Take it out right now. If it's safe to do so, that is. Take it out right now and go to the purple podcast icon, which is already on your phone. Press it. Then search Jim Rome Podcast. It'll pop right up next to the Daily Jungle. Here's what you do from there. Very simple. Subscribe to the podcast. Listen to the podcast. Review the podcast. If you're on your computer, go iTunes and do the same thing. Search Jim Rome Podcast. Subscribe, listen, review. iPhone, iPad, Mac, whatever Apple product you have, make sure to subscribe to the podcast. Subscriptions and reviews are huge. That's how you climb the charts. That's how we get seen. That's how we get heard. And that's ultimately how we get in front of as many ears and eyes as we can. And that's what it's all about for me. It's important for me to get this product in front of as many people as possible because I have a lot of pride in the product. We're working hard on the product. And it's a competitive space. And I really do believe that we have the best content out there and it's free. And I want to make sure as many people as possible can hear it. So I'm asking you. In fact, no, I'm challenging you. Prove to the podcast world that the jungle is as strong and as vibrant as it's ever been. Get this thing into the top 10. Now, what do you get out of this? What do you get out of this? Other than, hey, Rome, we love the show, we love you, and we want to support you. But can you give us something else? I can. How about this? You get this thing into the top 10 on iTunes by Friday. Get this into the top 10 on iTunes by Friday, and Bum Smack will be allowed for a single segment that day. I will bring back Bum Smack for one segment on Friday if you get the podcast into the top 10. Don't tell me I'm not doing anything for you. How about this? If you get this thing into the top 5, and that's doable. It's been in the top 10 already several times. You can do that. So I'm not asking for something impossible. Get this into the top 10, and I bring Bum Smack back for a single segment. Get this thing into the top 5 on iTunes by Friday, and personal appearances as show fodder will be allowed for one segment that day. So if you get in the top 5, you're going to get Bum Smack and personal appearance as show fodder smack in the same show. And they each get their own segment. Hey, why stop there? It's a good episode now. Bob Myers, Kevin Frazier. If you can get this thing into the top 3, and that's only happened once, but it has happened. If you get this thing into the top 3 on iTunes by Friday, I will bring back the family for one segment that day. Say whatever you want about whoever you want and talk about how they look like a rat. So if you get us in the top 3, the Rat Family's back, Bum Smack is back, and personal appearance as show fodder is back. And if you jump ship and you hit a grand slam and you get us up to number 1 on iTunes by Friday, if I've already said that, I'll bring back the Rat Family, Bum Smack, and personal appearances as show fodder. What's left? What would be the biggest prize of all to get to number 1? Get this thing to number 1 on Friday on iTunes, and I'll do exactly what you want me to do. And you know what I'm talking about. I don't even need to say it out loud. You know exactly what I'm talking about. Because if you listen to this show, you know the one thing that I will not do. Ever. But if you get this podcast to number 1 on iTunes by Friday, I'll do it. I'll do it. I'll play it. I'll play the call. You have my word. I will play the call. So there you go. There are your marching orders. It's not like I'm asking you to support crap. I'm asking you to support great programming that is original and it's free that you cannot go anywhere else. I've told you how to do it. I've told you what's out there for you. Get us in the top 10. Bum Smack is allowed once again for a segment. Get us in the top 5. personal appearance as show fodder smack will be allowed. Get us in the top three. The family's back for a segment. And get us all the way to number one, and you get your call. First thing through. Good God, Jim. You're making a deal with the devil. No! CLED 914 tweets, I hope one of us clones is writing all of this down or recording it independently so we can hold you to it this Friday. Hey, listen, that's a challenge. You've absolutely hold me to it. Nothing would make me happier than to do some of these things. In fact, the thing probably is going to get me in a whole lot of trouble. But if you can get me to number one for the week or on Friday, I don't care. So you get something out of it. I felt badly asking you for anything because I never do. In fact, I felt so badly about that, I knew I had to give you something in return. So you do those things, that's what you get. Tiered. It's staggered. There are certain levels. It's like if you're in sales. You hit a certain level, you get a certain prize. Get me in the top 10, you get that prize. Get me in the top 5, you get that prize. Get me in the top 3, you get that prize. You can talk about people who look like rats. Dave Doran. You go down to Tallahassee, you jump on Florida State early on, then you wouldn't let up. Jimbo Fisher said after that game that your team was always one play ahead of them. So how proud were you not only of the way your team started that game, but how they finished that game?
That's what it was all about. You know, we've been knocking on the door against Florida State for 3 years. We've had a lead and not finished, and everybody in the locker room knew, you know, it was a start-to-finish game that Florida State would play with tremendous energy and that they wouldn't let up. So it was great to see our guys, you know, take a lot of work and a lot of pride in that work and stay together, you know, in a hostile environment and find a way to finish it.
Yes, that seems key to me, the way they stay together, in the sense that every single time it seemed like Florida State might find a way back in, either your defense got a key stop or the offense would make something happen and extend the lead. Obviously, some of that ability to show up at the right time is talent. How much of that, though, is about the intangibles that you preach, toughness, will, and heart?
A lot of it. You know, I think it's something you build in time as you change your culture and you build the camaraderie and the love in the locker room that you want the guys to have for each other. And sometimes you need adversity to create it. And the obstacles that have been, you know, in front of us as a football team, we've used the right way. And I think, you know, you saw key plays made by key players at key moments. And I thought the offense and defense really played off of each other and continued to help each other throughout the game.
Dave Doran joining us. Now, each week you and the players focus on one single word. One of the words is faith, as in faith in your teammates, faith in the plan, faith in the work that has gone into the preparation. So how does faith show up on the field in key moments?
You know, I think it's just believing in yourself as a player, understanding that you have to trust your training and trust the man next to you, trust the game plan, trust your coaches, and most importantly, trust yourself to make the play. And a lot of that is just repetition and muscle memory to the point where you're not thinking anymore. You know, we have a saying here, you don't practice until you can do it right. You practice till you can't do it wrong. And that's just something that our guys really have bought into, is the process of doing things the right way.
I like that. Dave Doran joining us, head coach at NC State. You talked about some guys making key moments or key plays in key moments. Defensive lineman Bradley Chubb had 7 tackles, 3 for a loss. He had 2 sacks. He had a forced fumble. In other words, an enormous performance. What do you make of the way he showed up on the big stage?
Well, that's what you would expect from a great player in his last year of college football. I mean, your seniors have to play like seniors as the hourglass runs out of sand in their career. From a college standpoint, you want to see them make those plays they've dreamt about making and worked so hard. And Bradley did a tremendous job leading our football team, and some of his plays came at the end of drives, the end of quarters, the end of halves. When a lot of guys would be tired, he played his best football.
You know, he appeared to spit on the Florida State logo, but he quickly apologized for it. You've said that on the field, he is one of the meanest guys around, but off the field, he's one of the nicest guys around. How does he go about flipping that switch when it matters most?
That's the kind of guy you want to coach. You know, I mean, he's got tremendous passion for the game and tremendous passion for his reputation, and he's got great parents, a great brother, and you know, that's what makes Bradley a great competitor, I think, is he's so driven to be the best him. And one of the things he came back for was to learn how to use his emotions the right way. And he played a great football game for us, had a moment where he lost himself and quickly got it back. And I know, like every player, when they go through something, he'll learn from it and be better for it.
You know, your quarterback, Ryan Finley, was 22 of 32, 230 yards, a couple of touchdowns. For the season, he now has more than 1,200 yards, 8 touchdowns, and no interceptions. Last season was his first with you since arriving from Boise State. How far has he come from last year to this year?
He's come a long way, and not just from a physical standpoint. He worked hard in the offseason. He gained 15 pounds and made himself, you know, a stronger football player, more resilient that way physically. But the biggest thing Ryan's done is build great chemistry with the players and coaches. You know, when you come in as a transfer, it's hard. You don't have a recruiting class you're a part of, and you don't know the guys, and you weren't recruited with them. And for him, he came in, you know, in the summertime. So he was trying to get to know a roster and win a job and learn a coaching staff and a culture all at the same time. And 12 months later, he's been able to really absorb himself into it and become a part of it and a leader within it.
We're talking NC State football with Dave Doran, the head coach, for a couple of more moments. You know, I want to go back earlier to the season, in the season, to your win over Furman, which was a game where Sean Boone had an interception return for a TD. He'd been dealing with a lot that week because days before, the roof in his family home fell during Hurricane Irma. As the head coach, how do you go about helping one of your players through something as difficult as that?
You know, I just talked to our leadership council, and Sean's a part of it that week, and I just told the guys, I said, hey, look, I know we're getting ready for games, and I know football and school and everything's going on, but I know you're from, a lot of our players are from Florida, and I said, don't think for a second that you can't come up and talk to me or any of these coaches and ask for help, whether it's emotional help or, you know, do you need us to call people? Do you need us to make sure people are okay, that you're not alone? And, you know, I told them I can't imagine what it would be like to be away from home and know that there's a storm headed for my family, and that's scary, you know, for those guys. And Sean, you know, that night just reached out to me and let me know what was going on. And I think just knowing as a player that you have a support group around you that's going to help you through things helps.
Rich, what's up?
Romy, dude, what is up? I'm just coming off a high from a great sports weekend. I watched the University of Oklahoma survive the squeaker against Baylor, which a team that shouldn't even have been in the neighborhood with these guys. But Lincoln Riley found a way to get 3-0 as a brand new coach. He got handed a huge mantle. OSU loses embarrassingly to the Horned Frogs. And guess what? The Bills are playing the team that gave the Cowboys a beating so badly that they didn't even recover from until the second quarter last night. Unbelievable. Denver and Buffalo. Tyrod Taylor is built to beat that team. Exactly what they needed to do it. Because nobody circles up the wagons like the Bills. It was unbelievable. Then we get Carmelo Anthony dropped into our lap. Do you understand how big that is, Rome? This is unbelievable. I know exactly what they're shooting for. The Stiftung to Golden State Warriors and KD. I think finally that tweet pissed somebody off enough. And I'm looking forward to another great week of wins. And I'll tell you this. I assure you, the autumn wind is not a Raider. It is a collective commitment to growing a tail on national TV. That team is finished. As always, love to hate.
Thank you very much for listening. I appreciate you. Remember, it is Podcast Tuesday. That means the Daily Jungle and the Jim Rome Podcast. Episode 5 drops later today with Golden State Warriors GM Bob Myers and Entertainment Tonight's Kevin Frazier. Subscribe to both. Trust the podcast. We're out.